Hello, this is Ray, and welcome to the 30th edition of the Ray's World podcast. This podcast is called In Transition, and it is not coming from my computer as it normally would. This time, the podcast is coming from my brand new Zoom HD4 recorder, which I just got, and which I will now give you a little bit of by way of preliminary experimentation. I have no intention in this podcast to belabor the points that Lynette made in her podcast, nor the points that Neil made in his three podcasts on the Zoom. I do, however, want to make a couple of observations about the appearance of the Zoom, describe in my own way how to get into the battery compartment, give you a little bit of an observation, and ask a question about the built-in microphone setup, which I dare say Neil can answer quite easily, and then I'm going to give you a horrifying story through the line-in, which I hope sincerely never happens to any of you out there. As Neil and others have said, the Zoom looks like a huge, oversized electric razor. And that's about the best way to describe it. If you want to know more about the actual appearance of the Zoom, consult Neil's podcast on the subject, because he does a thorough job, and there's no need for me to go over it again. I will say this. This file is being sent as a... exactly as I'm recording it. I am not normalizing anything. I'm not changing the levels. I'm using the Zoom default levels. And, right now, I would say that I'm about 10 inches away from the microphone, roughly. I do notice that there is a... just a very slight delay when I talk and I hear my voice in the Zoom, but the delay is so small that you notice it, but it doesn't really bother you. How to get into the battery compartment? Well, Neil already has given a very good description of it, but I'd like to try my hand at it. To get into the battery compartment, there's the little latch that he talked about is right behind the microphones on the top of the recorder. Whether you're right-handed or left-handed, it really doesn't matter because you can do this with either hand. If you manipulate the latch with the thumb of one hand so that it is manipulated away from you, the lid pulls back just enough so that you can reach with the fingers of that same hand just underneath the lid and grab it and pull it up and out. And when you do that, the lid swings down and out of the way. The lid contains two battery terminals for the batteries. And then if you orient the recorder so that its back is facing you, you have three things. You have two cylindrical holes to the left and to the right within the battery area. Those cylindrical holes are where the batteries go in. You insert the leftmost battery with its negative or minus end pointing down into the recorder. And you insert the right side battery with its plus or positive end pointing down into the recorder. Toward the recorder housing, you'll find the slot where the SD card goes in, and that is... it looks kind of like a half-circle kind of slot. And as Neil said, the nibs of the card go downward and toward the recorder housing. The card goes in, and it snaps in. And when you want to remove the card, you just have to press down on that again. It springs back up, but it doesn't... If you do it gently, it doesn't spring back up all the way. And I found it was, at least with the 128 meg card that I'm now using, I found it was kind of difficult to get my fingernail in the spot where I could have pulled out on the card. So what I found is that when you go to remove the card, if you press down on it, and if you pop your finger off the surface of the card, the pressure of the spring action forces the card up enough that you can actually grab it by the sides and pull it out. Perhaps that isn't the best way to do it, but that's the best way that I found to do it. Now, I have, in order for me to show you this next observation, I have to take the windscreen off. And I've now done that. By the way, I'm on the normal, I'm on the default microphone settings for now. Okay. I'm going to tell you that the recorder is oriented so that its front, that is the part with the joystick, is facing me. And I'm going to tell you that the microphones are indeed pointed at 45 degrees. I'm going to tap with the index finger of my right hand the microphone that is located on the right side. Hear that? I'm gently rubbing the tip of the microphone located on the right-hand side, and you're hearing the effect in the left channel. If I block the top of the microphone, you can hear now my voice is coming through mainly in the right channel, but it's the right channel microphone that I'm... It's the microphone physically located on the right-hand side that I'm gently tapping. If I were to take the index finger and tap the microphone located physically on the left-hand side with the front of the zoom oriented toward me, hear that? It's affecting the right channel. Now, I would dare speculate that Neil, or somebody else who knows about this sort of thing, could explain to me why this is so. And now I've got the windscreen back on. Let me just check something here. Okay. apparently I'm discovering something about this recorder even as I speak. If you're in menus and you want to make a setting and you're not really sure how you're going to do a particular thing, what I found is that it doesn't pull you out of menus. You know how some things will pull you out of menus after, 30 seconds or sometimes a minute of your doing nothing? These menus don't take you out of menus. You have to get out of them manually, otherwise it'll just keep you in menus all the time. Now I'm going to, right now, I'm going to describe briefly the attenuation switch positions that I'm using. The built-in microphone, its switch is set all the way up. This is the one I feel most comfortable with if I'm just talking in a quiet environment. But if I were to put the microphone in its medium position, like it is now, and then if I were to come in close on top of the microphone, well, actually, I would say that I'm about an inch or so away from the microphone. This particular setup, I suppose, might be okay for certain circumstances. You might want to do this if you're in a situation where there's a lot of background sound, and you want to be sure your voice is heard, but you don't want to overmodulate the recording, and you do want to keep some background sound, this might be a good approach to take. But this approach has as I see it, two primary drawbacks, quite apart from the obvious fact of my popping my plosives in this way. It does tend to record more of my breath noise, regardless of how quietly I breathe in. And this might be good if I were in a noisy, very noisy background situation, and I wanted to make sure that I was heard over the din. But if I'm just talking quietly at home, you know, and I do want to hear some background sounds, and I don't want my voice to be so obviously louder than the background sounds, I would certainly not do that. I would put the microphone attenuation on high, and then I would back away to about 10 inches or so away from the microphone. This way my voice is heard, but it is not so obviously, you know, there. It's not so obviously above everything else. Now, I'm going to shut up for about 20 seconds and let you hear this whistling sound that Neil mentioned in his podcast. You'll hear how it pulses. Listen. That wasn't exactly 20 seconds, I know, but perhaps I can illustrate this much better if I turn the extended microphone attenuation switches. Let me disconnect these quarter-inch jacks for a minute. If I turn the microphone attenuation, the external microphone attenuation switches all the way up, as they now are, and then if I were to go to the external microphones, all you will hear is this pulsating whistle. Listen. Okay, well, I think my point is made. So, it's back down to the lowest position for the attenuating, external microphone settings, and forgive the noise of my putting the quarter-inch back in. Let me explain what I've got as far as this little setup here. I have a 3 feet long patch cord, which at one end terminates in a male 1/8-inch phono plug. The other end of that patch cord terminates in 2 male RCA connectors. So again, that's one end terminating in a male stereo 1/8-inch phone plug, and the other end terminating in 2 male RCA connectors. All that was necessary for me to use this was to convert each one of those RCAs to a mono 1/4-inch plug, which I have now done. And I'm now going to play you something directly off of a Walkman CD player. This particular Walkman CD player, which I got from IRTI, has both an earphone jack and a true line-level output jack. So there's no, you know, trying to fuss with the headphone volume on this. What I'm about to play for you is a little something which I burned onto a CD earlier today. And it's essentially Jaws reading what I consider to be a horror story. It is, or surely it must be a horror story, for I hope this never happens to any of you. It's a story about a woman in Fair Oaks, California, who had a really big satellite installation problem back in 2004. And basically the satellite installer went on a rampage. I'm going to be feeding this directly, it's Jaws reading the story, and I'm using the VoiceWare Paul voice for this. I made a .wav file out of this, and I burned that .wav file onto a CD. And now it's in my CD player, and it's waiting to serve this podcast. This is truly a nightmare, and I do sincerely hope none of you ever have to go through this. This story that I'm about to play for you is that of a satellite installer who went on a rampage. Let's hear this horror story that this poor woman in Fair Oaks had to suffer through.
Customer accuses satellite dish installer of rampage. A Fair Oaks woman is considering getting a restraining order after a bizarre experience with a man who was hired to install her satellite dish. Lila Lopez responded to a DirecTV offer in the mail last week and set up an appointment. They told me the technician would be there the next morning between 8 and 12 and then he never showed up, Lopez said. So, Lopez went to work, left her two young daughters at home with a babysitter, and called the installer's office to complain about the missed appointment. 3 hours later, the DirecTV installer showed up at the house. He was greeted by the babysitter, who says the installer was angry that Lopez had called his boss to complain. They say he ripped existing cable wire from not only Lopez's house but the neighbor's house and then went on a rampage. My outlet jacks for cable were broken, my sliding door was broken, my blinds were broken, my screen was broken, my Comcast equipment was gone and missing. My lights outside were broken, my fence was broken, Lopez said. They also say that when the installer was up on the roof, he began screaming and yelling. The next door neighbor came out and says the installer became so incensed, he threw some equipment down and hit the neighbor in the face. When Lopez called home, her terrified babysitter said she thought the installer was going to kill her. I just put the two babies in the room, and I locked myself in there while he was cussing and going back and forth in the house, said Teresa Constancio. The sheriff responded and a criminal complaint was filed. But the man has not been arrested. Since then, their car tires have been slashed. I need a restraining order, Lopez said. He threatened to kill me if he lost his job, which he has lost his job. Representatives from both DirecTV and BCK Communications, which hired the installer, say the man has been fired. They say they do criminal background checks on all installers and train them in customer service. And they say in the 21,000 satellite systems that they have installed, never has there been an incident like this. They recommend that customers always check the identity of an installer or repairman before allowing them in their home. Customers should never allow someone inside that you weren't expecting. And if any problems arise, customers should contact the company, and if necessary, call the police.
Whoa, ouch. As for good measure, I'll give you this second story. This one was written first person by a fellow named Frank from Alpharetta, Georgia. And this is a satellite installation story. This is a nightmare of a satellite installation story that he had to tell. And he wrote, whereas that last story was in the first person, this story is in the first person, and it's written, as you'll see, by someone named Frank in Alpharetta, Georgia, and you will observe that the company that Frank had trouble with is also BCK Communications. Here's his nightmare of a story.
On January 13, 2006, I responded to an ad to get DirecTV installed in place of Dish Network. I called BCK Communications and spoke with Brandy at extension 5124. She was extremely helpful and I ordered DirecTV. She set up the installation for January 14, 2006 between 8 a.m. and noon. On 1/14, I waited and waited. At 11 a.m. I called BCK and they said the installer was on his way. I called back at 12:30 and they said he would be there in an hour. He arrived at 2:30. He indicated that he had been assigned for installations for that morning. Even though I had spent most of the day waiting for him to show up, I decided not to make it an issue. The installer then proceeded to inform me of all of the problems with my installation. My basement was finished too completely. There was no way to get an additional feed to my family room. Cabling into the house would be difficult. We worked through these issues and he started the installation. At that point he confided that he had brought the wrong dish. He said he would install the one he had and return on 1/15 at 9 a.m. to switch it with the right one. Then when he got to the installation in my family room, he asked where my phone line for my DVR box was. I indicated that I didn't have a phone line where the cable enters my family room. He then told me that the DVR would not work without a phone line. I told him that I had DVR with Dish Network for over 2 years without a phone line and it worked fine. He called tech support and they indicated that it would work for a while and then stop working. Finally, someone figured out that the model he was installing at my house did not need a phone line. He finished the installation with the exception of the correct dish and a bad receiver at 6:30. The next morning 9 a.m. came and went with him not showing up. I called at 10 a.m. and they told me he was on his way. I called at 11 and they said they left him a message. I asked to speak to a manager and was transferred to a man named Jerry. He did not give me his last name. By this point, I admit that I was frustrated and angry. I told Jerry that the situation was getting intolerable and that I wanted to know where the installer was and when he was going to show up. Jerry told me to adjust my tone. I am the director of sales for a software company in Atlanta, and if anyone that worked for me ever told an angry customer to adjust their tone, he would be dismissed immediately. Jerry was sarcastic and condescending in both what he said and how he said it. He did nothing to apologize for what I had been through or to defuse the situation. He agreed to set up an installer to come out on the 16th. I agreed. At this point, I had no choice. Jerry was rude and not at all what I would want in my customer service and support personnel. The installers finally showed up at 12:30 and I had to leave them at my house unsupervised because I had other commitments that I could not change. I do not have enough experience with DirecTV at this point to determine if it is better than Dish Network. I can say that my installation experience with BCK Communications was a complete nightmare, and I will strongly recommend anyone who asks to use a different company when getting DirecTV. I could imagine that they treat all of their customers the way they treated me, but by the same token, I am sure I am not alone. Frank Alpharetta, Georgia.
Well, let me come out of menus here because I'm done with that. Now I'm going to just go ahead and pull these quarter inch plugs out, and I'm going to go into my bedroom because I want to do another test. Now, this, normally when I want to do a windscreen test of something, I would, just blow into the windscreen and see how it is. I would step outside. Well, I will step outside, but I don't think there's much of a breeze. Let's see, I don't think there's much of a breeze. Let me try and face this into the wind. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting zipping effect here. Oh, let's see. I can hear some background sounds. It's getting a little cool out here. I don't know if you can hear it, but I can hear the street lights. Well, I call them street lights, they're the outside lights. So let me step back in here and try to do this another way. Let me give this apartment door another good slam. I don't think that clipped the mics. I think a more brutal test might be found here in my bedroom. And the reason why I say that is because I have my trusty 20-inch fan right here that I've installed. My trusty 20-inch fan ready to serve. And I'm going to turn it on. I'll just go ahead and turn it on low. Okay, now let's give these microphones a real workout. Whoa, this is... Let me come down to the middle position here on the attenuation switch. Yikes! Okay, now this is a little more... I'm still getting the zipping effect here. Let me come right up to the fan here. Oh, what the heck? Let me turn it on high just for fun. Yikes! Whoa! Man, this is weird. Yay! Okay, let me see if the limiter has any effect on this. Okay, let me just come in here. That's the compressor, and that's the limiter. Let me just see. Come right up to the fan. Yeah, see, in this case, the limiter appears to be taking out the zipping effect. But, oh my goodness gracious. Whoa. Yes, indeed. Man. Goodness gracious. Let me put the mic attenuation settings on high. Whoa, man. This is nice. This is way distorted today. Wow. Okay, I think let's go with that. Woo! Wow. Okay, I think that'll do for that. Let me just come back out of the turn the limiter off and get out of the menus and turn this fan off. Oh man. Come back on high attenuation here. Oh, I am on high attenuation. Oh, yikes. Well, as I walk back to my living room, I would make one observation. I found that when I try to connect the Zoom to my computer, I find it's better to turn the power off, connect the USB plug, turn the power back on, wait about 20 seconds, then go down one and then press enter, because like Neil said, you're in the menus on where you need to be on this thing. Okay, well, that's it for this podcast, folks. I haven't figured out everything I need to figure out about this Zoom. Not by a long shot. I'm looking now to the next task, which is to learn how to delete files from the Zoom. Just in case you're wondering, yes, when you go into the Explorer environment with the Zoom, you have, there's two folders, and there's a stereo folder. In that stereo folder, you can identify your files in chronological order, because the file right at the beginning of the card will be STE00, or maybe it's STE000. The second file is STE001. I think it's three digits. I can't remember. If it is two digits, then it's just 01. The third file, of course, would be STE002, STE003. But the first file is always STE000. So that really does help in trying to figure out what's what. Okay, and with that, I will go ahead. I guess I'll go ahead and end this. Oh, one more thing I found out about this, and that is that when I first format the card, and if I press any of the buttons down the side, you know, the A, B, C, or D buttons. And then I press the record to go in the record standby. I can't navigate into any of the standard input menus unless I press directly in on the joystick and then press up or left to get out of record. That's probably because when I press the D key, for example, that says MP3, it probably takes me into the format menu there. Okay. Well, that really is all for this podcast on the 30th edition of Ray's World. If you want to contact me, you can do so at retjr@bellsouth.net. That's retjr at bellsouth.net. When I put this file up, I think the only thing I'm going to do is rename the file to comply with the naming sequence in my podcast. I don't think that renaming the file changes any of its audio characteristics, but that's a chance I suppose I'll have to take. Oh well. Thank you for joining me right here on this, the 30th edition of the Ray's World podcast.